This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Bodies of more than 8,000 Palestinians are missing in Gaza as the death toll from the Israeli onslaught surpasses the 20,000 mark. The Israeli military admits that nearly 500 of its troops have been killed in Gaza as Palestinian resistance fighters say that they have destroyed 35 Israeli military vehicles in recent days. And Iran's foreign ministry spokesman categorically rejects U.S. allegations that Iran was behind the recent drone attack on an oil tanker in the Indian Ocean.
Well, welcome to the studios from the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
It has been 80 days since Israel launched its deadly onslaught on Gaza. The regime has carried out fresh strikes that dovetail with the narrative that the onslaught is actually a genocidal war. At least 95 people have been killed in the strike on the Al-Maghazi camp in central Gaza. The air raid also injured dozens of others. Gaza's government office has once again urged the international community to put pressure on Israel to stop its genocide. The resistance movement Hamas also described the bombardment as a horrific massacre. Other areas across Gaza also witnessed new strikes. In Deir al-Balah, 7 people lost their lives after warplanes bombed a residential building. Another airstrike killed around 24 Palestinians in the southern city of Khan Yunis. To the north, the regime's bombardment killed 10 members of a family in the Jabalia camp. The total death toll is now over 20,400, most of them women and children. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has released a statement on its recent retaliatory attacks against the invading Israeli forces in Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade says its fighters killed 48 Israeli troops during a number of operations over the past 4 days. It added that the operations involved missiles, anti-fortification, and anti-personnel devices. According to Al-Qassam, its fighters also clashed with the regime's forces at point-blank range. In the same period, 35 Israeli military vehicles were partially or completely destroyed as well. Israel says 162 of its troops have been killed since the start of the ground invasion of Gaza in October. Palestinians say that the actual number is much higher. The military wing of Hamas has pounded the Israeli military's headquarters and command centers, as well as some gatherings of the regime forces in the Gaza Strip. The group has also targeted Tel Aviv with missiles. The official death toll from the Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip surpasses 20,000. The toll is likely to be even higher, as officials say thousands of people are still missing and are buried under the rubble. Our correspondent Muti Abu Musaba joined us earlier for more on the topic.
Israeli occupation forces maintain their airstrikes and incursions on Gaza Strip. The people here are still shocked with the latest massacre. The appalling massacre, actually, that took place in the middle area of Gaza Strip, particularly Al-Maghazi city. We are talking about increasing number as the civil defense crews here in the middle area are attempting to extract more dead bodies from under the rubble of those destroyed houses, taking the number of the Palestinian civilians who have been slaughtered to over than 70 Palestinian civilians, in addition to dozens of the Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, are still trapped and missing under the rubble of those destroyed houses. According to the Gaza Health Ministry and the civil defense crews, that the number of the Palestinian civilians who are still missing and trapped under the rubble actually exceeded 8,000 Palestinian civilians. And when we are talking about this number, we are talking about another dark side of this continuous and ongoing onslaught.
The Israeli regime continues to kill Palestinian journalists in Gaza on an almost daily basis. Israeli forces have killed scores of journalists since October the 7th of this year in a grave violation of international laws and norms. intentional targeting of journalists is considered a war crime and a crime against humanity.
On October 7th, the Israeli regime launched brutal bombardment of the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming tens of thousands of innocent civilians. Palestinian journalists and media workers were no exception. The Israeli regime has so far killed more than 100 Palestinian journalists as well as dozens of their family members. According to Reporters Without Borders, Palestinian journalists have no safe refuge and no way of leaving the blockaded territory.
Every day, Zionist forces target journalists in Gaza, and if they cannot kill them, they kill their family members. The Zionist regime has killed scores of our colleagues along with their families. Tel Aviv wants to silence us and prevent us from exposing Israeli war crimes.
Over the course of the Israeli onslaught, dozens of Gazan journalists have also been reported missing, detained, or injured. Israeli forces have also targeted their media offices and homes.
My message to the international community is that we here, as a journalist, we didn't feel that we are safe. We are targeted, and every time we can be bombed with the Israeli occupation forces. So my message is that we have to be saved. We are doing our work. We are only covering the acts that Israeli made here in the Gaza Strip. So we are trying to get this message to the world.
Experts have dubbed the Israeli aggression since October 7th as the deadliest period for journalists covering military conflicts in more than three decades.
We were displaced from the Tel al-Hawa neighborhood in Gaza City to the house of our friend, the journalist Adel Zorob, in Rafah. He hosted us for 70 days, and a few days ago, my family was sleeping in the room close to his room, and an Israeli airstrike killed him along with several members of his family and my family.
Reporters Without Borders has described the Gaza Strip as the graveyard of journalists. Journalists in Gaza have been at the forefront of the campaign to expose Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. Experts say Palestinian journalists are paying the price for the international apathy toward Israeli war crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Freed Palestinian prisoners have recounted their harrowing stories of torture while in the Israeli military's custody. Released detainees have said that they were kept tied up for days. They were beaten up, and they were not allowed to eat or drink or even use the toilet. Some say Israeli soldiers poured cold water on them throughout the night. A hospital director in the city of Rafah, in the south of the Gaza Strip, said that around 20 men released from Israeli detention and admitted to the hospital had bruises and marks of beatings on their bodies. Our correspondent from Ramallah, Mona Kandil, says Israeli forces have raided almost all villages and towns in the occupied West Bank in the recent 24 hours.
Today, Israeli forces continued raiding the Palestinian areas. Israeli troops stormed almost all villages and cities in the occupied West Bank, detaining at least the numbers that we received, the 20 Palestinians. Israeli forces last night raided Jenin refugee camp and clashed with Palestinians. People there said that clashes and exchange of fire continued for several hours between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces, who remained there only for a couple of hours. Then they pulled back out from the Jenin refugee camp. In Ariha, the Israeli forces raided the Aqbat Jabal refugee camp and detained at least two Palestinians there. Israeli forces raided the Tal Sultan refugee camp, and they stormed the homes there, searched the homes as well, and they claimed that they were searching for Palestinians wanted by the Israeli forces. In Al-Jalami town, northeast Jenin, at least nine Palestinians had been arrested by the Israeli forces. Also in Aqabi, north Tobas, at least two people were detained. Others had been detained in Za'atara village, east Beit Lahem. In Burqa, northwest Nablus, where the Israeli forces stormed this village, snipers were stationed at the rooftop of the buildings. They detained dozens of people.
The area along Lebanon's southern border has frequently witnessed exchanges of fire between Hezbollah and the Israeli military since the regime began its onslaught on the Gaza Strip on October 7th. Well, now there are reports of new clashes there. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, was with us with the details.
despite the minimal operations in some cases, Hezbollah seems to have a policy when they basically are going for qualitative operations. And it's not just a number of operations. In some cases, you have 12, 13 operations against the bases. There definitely needs to be a targeting of those bases on a daily basis. But you know also that the Israelis have also pushed back their forces. Further off from the border, they are not all remaining in the post. Despite that, Hezbollah has also targeted the newly situated posts, the ones that go beyond that border, some newly formed barracks and posts and bunkers as well for the Israeli forces, whether it is in infantry or the elite forces that are in that area have also been targeted by Hezbollah. Hezbollah has used the Burkan rocket on and on in several cases. Of course, the Katyusha rocket is only used after the targeting of civilians in Lebanon. We see definitely that this has been used several times. And so this is basically the case. This is what we're looking at right now. There is definitely a tit-for-tat continuous operations. But the Israelis are, like I said, moving a bit more, stepping up their firepower. They're also going further off. And we're talking about just on the border of the Litani River. And if they do cross that, I believe Hezbollah will probably have more to say if they cross the northern parts of the Litani, if they go further off from 20 kilometers.
Tehran has categorically rejected U.S. allegations that Iran was behind the recent drone attack on an oil tanker in the Indian Ocean. The foreign ministry spokesman says the accusations are baseless. Nasser Kanani says that Tehran has always played a significant role in ensuring the security of navigation and trade in international waters. Kanani made the remarks in his weekly presser. He said the U.S. is to blame for the recent tensions in regional waters. According to the spokesman, this is because the U.S. is the sole culprit for the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, its continuation, and the regime's war crimes against Palestinians. The spokesman also slammed, in his words, endless U.S. allegations against Tehran. He noted that Iran has always acted responsibly in international waters, and the U.S. is not in a position to make accusations against the country. An American warship has targeted a Yemeni reconnaissance plane in the Red Sea. One of the missiles has exploded near a commercial vessel traveling from Russia. The spokesperson of Yemen's Ansarullah Movement says the U.S.-led coalition has turned the region into a battle zone. Our correspondent Nassana Yusuf Mauri earlier joined us to tell us more about Ansarullah's reaction.
With a spokesperson of the delegation who tweeted, or he's basically saying that the U.S. and its allies, they're turning the Red Sea into a battlefield, into a battle zone, that this possesses the grave threat to international shipping. Not the Yemeni army's targeting of Israeli-linked ships, but rather the U.S. and Western military reinforcements and activities currently happening in the Red Sea. This was a Yemeni unmanned reconnaissance drone that was patrolling it's, you know, as it does on a daily basis near Yemeni territorial waters. And, you know, it just happened that it was a ship that, you know, that ship from the port of Russia that was nearby in the direction or in the proximity of this unmanned drone as it was patrolling. The U.S. probably thought, the U.S. Navy probably thought that this was an encouragement or this was an advancement for Yemen's army. So they fired towards this merchant ship, this vessel that had nothing to do with what is happening between, with the military reinforcements in the Red Sea and Yemen's military activities. Yet it was still targeted. And I think what the spokesperson for Yemen's Ansarullah is alluding to is that more merchant and cargo ships are going to be in danger, not from the Yemeni army or Yemen's naval forces, but they're going to be in danger because of these, you know, this heavy U.S.-backed military advancement in the Red Sea. As the Yemeni government, as the Yemeni army has mentioned, the only thing that they're targeting in the Red Sea are ships linked to the Israeli regime. They will continue to target these ships, but it doesn't necessarily mean that this is the closing of a major international shipping lane like Bab el-Mandeb, because the only entity that's being targeted in the Red Sea is that of the Israeli entity, not any other country. Even the U.S. government or the U.K. government ships or, you know, ships that are linked to these Western powers who have hostile intentions against Yemen, those ships are not being targeted yet. You know, the U.S. and the Western media propaganda machine, they like to frame this conflict as if Ansarullah or the Yemeni naval forces are posing a grave threat to the world economy and international shipping, which is just not the case, at least not at this moment in the conflict.
Demonstrations in solidarity with Palestinians are continuing across the world as Gaza remains under heavy Israeli military strikes. In the capital, Rabat, Moroccan protesters called on the government to abolish its normalization agreement with Israel. It was one of the largest pro-Palestinian marches in Morocco since the start of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza on October 7. Protests against Israeli genocide also continued in the U.S. during the Christmas holiday weekend. Protesters said there should be no business in Christmas as usual amid the atrocities. They also called on people to join the boycott sanctions movement to demand an end to U.S. support for Israel. There were also similar protests in Italy, the UK, Germany, and Pakistan. Meanwhile, people in Turkey have marched in the capital Ankara and the economic hub Istanbul to once again condemn Israel's aggression of the Gaza Strip. While holding both Turkish and Palestinian flags, the protesters said they will never leave the people of Gaza alone. Our correspondent in Istanbul, Roshan Saglam, has more.
Marching for Our Martyrs and Palestine was the name of the rally organized by the IHH, Humanitarian Relief Foundation in Turkey. Speaking in Istanbul, the IHH General President Bülent Yıldırım urged Egypt to open the Rafah border crossing for humanitarian aid to enter Gaza and for the wounded to get out of the besieged strip for treatment.
We came here today to denounce Israeli occupation crimes against humanity in Gaza. We are here to defend innocent men, women, and children who are under brutal bombardment every day. Hundreds took to the streets in Istanbul and Ankara to denounce Israelis' brutal attacks.
Elderly men, women, and children, people from all walks of life, marched the streets of Istanbul chanting anti-occupation slogans. Demonstrators said what is happening in Gaza is a genocide, calling on the whole world to stand against this criminal act and to call for a ceasefire.
We came here to show the world that we are standing against Zionism, we are against the killing of innocent civilians, against genocides and ethnic cleansing.
Slogans such as Criminal Israel and Free Palestine were chanted by angry protesters who say one day the land will be liberated from the Israeli occupation.
We are here to show the world our stance from what's happening in Gaza today. More than 2 months and the world is silent. We will not be silent. We are here to let the whole world hear our voice. We will forever say Israel is a terrorist state.
Pro-Palestinian rallies have been taking place around the world since the Israeli-U.S. genocide in Gaza started on October 7. Demonstrators here say they will continue their protests and demonstrations until a ceasefire is reached. They say they will never leave their brothers in Gaza alone. Roshan Saglam, Istanbul.
Palestinians in Gaza are praising the Yemeni resistance response to the Israeli and the U.S. genocidal campaign in the besieged strip.
The Yemeni people are known for their support for Palestine. For a long time in history, and during every Israeli aggression against Palestine, Yemen has been standing in support of the Palestinian people. We don't understand how other Arab countries remain silent in the face of these crimes and massacres, particularly those countries that have normalized ties with the Israeli occupation.
First of all, we thank the Yemeni people. We are very grateful for their supportive actions and their stance against Israel. Both Yemeni and Palestinian people have always been united and maintained strong relations. We hope that all Arab countries will stand in support of Palestine like Yemen has. We denounce Bahrain's position in support of the U.S. actions against the Yemeni resistance.
The only country that has stood up for Palestinian people during this aggression is Yemen, unlike the other Arab countries. The silence of Arab countries makes them complicit in Israel's crimes and massacres. We need real actions instead of statements. We need a coalition in favor of the Palestinians, not in favor of the Israeli regime.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Economic divide.
The Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip has continued unabated, even U.S.'s apparent warning to Israel from high-intensity to low-intensity warfare. I don't know if you heard that, which has prevented the murder of Palestinians. Well, that actually turned out to be the opposite. That continued. In the meantime, Yemen has stepped up to the plate and has targeted vessels affiliated to or going to or coming from Israel, warning the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war has to stop and aid needs to go into the Gaza Strip. Let's take a look at some of the highlights of this program. First, the Yemeni army and its targets, Israeli regime-related vessels, maritime routes under threat due to Israeli onslaught, and of course the world economic impact. Has it gotten to that point? We will look at that very closely. We're also going to take a look at the Israeli apartheid system. Overall, there was an announcement made about new settlements, 1,700 units. We will take a look also at demolitions and ultimately displacement as a result of all of that, and another practice of the apartheid regime, and that's surveillance. And the sector most important to Israel that has been hit hard is the tech sector. It's an economic freefall right now. IPO values have halved to $7.5 billion, and investors are abandoning this sector in droves.
Amid Israel's ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip, Israel has approved plans to build new settler units in the occupied East Al-Quds. 1,738 settlement units are to be built in the southeast of occupied Al-Quds. The new settlements would effectively seal off the last remaining corridor, connecting the Palestinian neighborhoods of Beit Safafa and Sharafat with the rest of Al-Quds. This plan poses a significant challenge to the possibility of creating a Palestinian urban continuum in East Al-Quds and obstructs almost every urban connection between Bethlehem and East Al-Quds. Israel occupied East Al-Quds in 1967. And later annexed it in a move never recognized by the UN. Around 300,000 Palestinians and 200,000 Israelis live in East Jerusalem. It is now widely believed that Israel is trying to change the demographic composition of the occupied West Bank in a bid to effectively prevent the possibility for the creation of any Palestinian state. Furthermore, Israel is using every possibility to monitor and control Palestinians. Israel's military occupation has become a laboratory for advanced surveillance systems, artificial intelligence, and spyware technology developed by Western corporations and Israel's military. And in some cases, data gathered by surveillance methods are used for Israel's policy of targeted assassinations. Israel's war on the Gaza Strip is continuing to take a heavy toll on the regime's economy.
It's time for the social media post on this program. First up, we're going to take a look at a tweet, which is known as X. Red Sea shipping costs rising after Houthis target more commercial vessels. In this program, we don't refer to the Houthis as Houthis. We refer to them as the Nasrallah Movement, however, just a side note. This actually is a website then where it said Red Sea shipping costs are rising. And it went on to say around 23,000 ships passed through the narrow Bab el-Mandab Strait connecting the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. And it further added, these attacks have the potential to become far more of a global strategic economic threat than simply a regional geopolitical one. So you can see how much of an impact this is having. Next, something that drew a reaction from the EU foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, when it came to settlements. He said, I'm appalled to learn that in the middle of a war, Israel is poised to commit new funds to build more illegal settlements. He referred to Israel as the Israeli government. We don't recognize Israel in this program. Therefore, we just refer to it as Israel or the Israeli regime. And then he said, this is not self-defense and will not make Israel safer. The settlements are grave IHL breach, and they are Israel's greatest security liability, not to mention that they also incur economic costs for Palestinians. And finally, we go to this one. Contradictions deepen in Israel as genocidal war on Gaza enters the third month. It said the settler colonial apartheid and occupation will not end unless international sanctions hurt its economy, argues anti-apartheid activist by the name of Ofer Neiman. All right, those were some of the social media posts. Hope you liked them. Let me introduce our first guest for our Q&A, the first Q&A of the program, Rinat Tamimi. She is a Palestinian activist who joins us. Rinat Tamimi, welcome to the program. You know, when you take a look at the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war, a lot of things are coming to light when it comes to Israel's apartheid regime practices on occupied Palestinian land. One of the things that was shocking in some sense is their announcement of illegal settlements, of which they announced about 1,700 or so settlements. There are other things that they are doing simultaneously that has been a hallmark of the way that they have violated Palestinian rights. What do you think about that? And how do you think this war, genocidal war, is going to go when it comes to the practices overall, illegal practices, I must say?
Now, the construction of these settlement units has severe consequences for Palestinians. It disrupts the normal flow of the economic activities, causing difficulties in commuting and hindering daily life for Palestinians. The strategic location of the settlements obstructs urban connections, contributing to economic challenges for Palestinians in these affected areas. Additionally, the approval of such construction during the ongoing conflict raises concerns about the border, the broader and wider trend of advancing settlement plans in East Al-Quds under the guise of wartime initiatives. It's important to note that the settlement building in the occupied territories is also considered illegal during to the UN resolutions and the international law. Settler violence is also rampant across the West Bank, which also affects the economic side of the particular East Al-Quds area. So, for example, in Palestinian villages, they beat up Palestinian farmers. They steal their olives. They don't let them to go and harvest their olives. They do also threaten to murder them if they try and use tractors to go into their fields or to go into their gardens. So these brutalities and tactics to crush Palestinians will have a big economic impact and making it harder for Palestinians to sustain their families and build their lives. And it is all part of Israel's agenda of terminating Palestinians into leaving their lands as part of their violent and big genocidal project.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Let me bring in our next guest. Rich Fohr joins us. He's an author of a number of books, and he joins us on this program. Thank you so much for joining Economic Divide, Rich Fohr. We want to talk about the Israeli apartheid regime practices that impacts the Palestinian economy, and in some ways, the Israeli economy also. One of the things that it practices is surveillance, and it uses that in many different ways. Tell us the economic impact that has on Palestinians overall.
For one thing, it creates enormous anxiety among the people who are being oppressed. And when people are anxious, it's hard for them to function as beneficially as they normally would. And so, again, everything Israel does is designed to make life miserable for Palestinians because maybe they will leave. Maybe they will, and a lot of Palestinians have indeed left. There are many Palestinians in Europe, in Turkey, you know, in other places, and this is what is happening. I mean, what Israel is doing, though, when you include their invasion of Gaza, they're also making life much more difficult for their own citizens. I've read the RAND Corporation, which is a major think tank in the United States, has said that Israel could lose as much as $400 billion in economic activity in the next 10 years.
Time now for the InfoNews section of the program. By the way, the InfoNews section is not like before, where we covered news with an economic flavor from around the world. We're focused only on the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip and, of course, economy-related. First up, demolitions by Israel in the occupied West Bank. We use Peace Now, and I'm going to say that name because they focus only on the demolitions and the settlements. This entry said the regime has razed a residential building, which is said to have all the permits required in the first place. And as a result, it displaced four families, which amounted to 32 members. Now, our take on this is since the beginning of 2023, Israeli occupation forces have carried out 256 demolition operations in the occupied West Bank, including outlets. The number of structures that were targeted was 303 during the first half of 2023. That's a lot of demolitions. All right, next up, it's very hard to talk about this particular topic. We researched it through. It's about Palestinian body parts that are being stolen. We figured we pick one that presents it in an impartial way. The entry asks the question, is Israel stealing organs from dead Palestinians? This is something that Israel has a long rap sheet on. And based on the most recent data that's available, it seems like they have done that. We're going to leave this for another program because there's a lot of money that's involved in this on the one end. So we'll cover that in one of our future programs. Another topic we looked at was forced displacement. This always leads to a negative impact on the Palestinian economy. This particular entry said that Gazans say that they fear a fate worse than bombs, and that's permanent exile. So we looked at that in the lens of the poor people of Palestine and Gaza. Where the Gazans say that they've been squeezed up against the border with Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, the town being Rafah, where they are at. And finally, we're going to take a look at the economy in the West Bank and how it has been impacted. It says it aches as Palestinians are losing Israeli work permits, which are required by Palestinians to have, but no longer. That's old news, and maybe it's permanent. Israel has terminated these permits for Palestinians from both the Israeli-occupied West Bank and also from Gaza from October the 7th.
Financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The Yemeni army has issued a warning against the Israeli regime. These are the hot spots. The Arabian Sea. Next to it, the Gulf of Aden. The Bab el-Mandab Strait. The Red Sea. And occupied Palestine. Bab el-Mandab facts, the width 16 to 20 miles. In terms of the vessels, daily 50 to 60 travel through the strait. The Yemeni army has targeted seven vessels so far. and it has advised many to change course. The U.S. has condemned Yemeni army drone strikes.
The Houthis represent a material threat to freedom of navigation, to commercial shipping, to lawful commerce, and they're doing so in a vital artery there at the Bab al-Mandeb and into the Red Sea. And the United States is working with the international community, with partners from the region and from all over the world, to deal with this threat.
Meanwhile, Yemen has updated its previous announcements.
The Yemeni armed forces would like to ensure that all ships and international shipments will be safe to travel to all ports except for Israeli ports. These ships must always keep their naval navigation system on. The Yemeni armed forces will not hesitate to target any ship that refuses to follow these instructions.
What are the economic impacts of Yemen's moves? Welcome to the in-depth section. When it comes to the significance of Bab al-Mandab Strait, 6.2 million barrels of oil pass through it daily. That's 10% of the world petroleum supply and 10% of the global trade volume. This means $9.6 trillion per year and $26 billion per day in terms of the money that's generated. The other impact, the port of Eilat in Israel, whose main products are conveying automobiles, the export of fertilizers, the conveying of fuels, and more significantly, the import of raw materials. The Yemeni targeting of Israeli-linked vessels impacts the port's sales volume significantly, especially the profits, $4 to $5 billion overall so far. The danger from transit incurs a huge insurance cost for premiums, 100% for all vessels except Israeli-owned ones, which have a 250% increase due to the added risk. Israel's tech industry is feeling the impact of the ongoing war. The number of mergers and acquisitions or initial public offerings of shares this year plunged to the lowest level in a decade. The value of Israeli tech exits this year slumped 56% to $7.5 billion from $16.9 billion a year earlier. At the same time, the number of deals dropped 38% to 45 from 72 last year, with the average value of the deals down 29% to $167 million from $235 million during the same comparative period. ...2022 was already a tough year for Israel's tech industry, as the uncertain specter of rising interest rates, global stock market fall, and tech layoffs led to a sharp slowdown in investments. Many local startups are now struggling to attract essential funding, in particular from foreign investors. Thousands of tech workers and startup founders have been drafted to the army, with more than 350,000 reservists called up. The Israeli economy's dependence on the tech sector has significantly grown in the past decade. The industry contributes to 18% of the local GDP.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matt Yaposyan. The Yemeni attacks on vessels in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab has caused major headaches for the Israeli economy, not only for exports but also for imports. Shortages and delays in sending goods from the south to the occupied territories to the Zionists is increasing. Port data indicates a 2 to 3 week delay in the arrival of ships carrying goods to the occupied territories. This is particularly seen in the food sector and electrical and electronic equipment. Israel is forced to resupply these goods from Europe. Laurent Katz, Vice President of Business Development at an electrical products company in the occupied territories, said any product that comes in by sea is facing delays in arrival, so there will be a major shortage of goods in the coming weeks. Another area which is of major concern regards the impact on the food sector. Food importers have also told Israeli authorities about the lack of cargo entering Israel due to the targeting of ships and delays in their arrival. Anita Golda, a businesswoman in an ice cream chain in Israel, said about the problem of importing all kinds of sugar and production inputs, and added, these inputs come from China and now there is a shortage of them and we hope their prices will not increase. Retailers in Israel are mostly afraid that importers will take advantage of this situation and raise prices. There is a shortage of many goods in Israel. Israelis have said they have felt this little by little, with businesses trying to deal with the crisis on a case-by-case basis. Businesses are trying to bring goods from new places. Previous sources cannot be counted on. That does it for this Quick Take section.
When all is said and done, the economic ramifications of this U.S.-Israeli genocidal war may be the deciding factor on when this would end. Because if this onslaught spreads or engulfs the region, the West Asia region, this would threaten oil and gas supplies, which would affect the world economy altogether. Maybe then Western countries will realize that this war, genocidal U.S.-Israeli war, needs to stop in order for them to stop the murder of Palestinians. The way that Yemen has done, they have stepped up to the plate to try to prevent this genocide from happening. That is it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. We did enjoy having you. From Miko Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kHz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein Latifi, and you're listening to your program For Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about the concept of humankind in the Holy Quran. And in the previous episode, we started the discussion about different dimensions of human being in the Holy Quran. And we said that according to the different verses of the Holy Quran, there is this dichotomy and duality between soul and body in the human being. And we talked a little bit of the human body and how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions the origin of human body in order to first remind us of our origin and show us His power and the capability of bringing about such complicated and sophisticated creation out of a drop of fluid. And also another reason would be that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala reminds us of the weakness that we have, and so that it reduces, hopefully, from some of the arrogant behaviors of some people. Now we should talk a little bit of the spirit, the ruh, that has been mentioned in the Holy Quran. According to the stories, pagans of Arabian Peninsula, al-Mushrikun, especially in Mecca, they went to the Jewish community that was in Arabian Peninsula, and they said, yes, there's this person that has started his ministry, or I don't know, his call or mission among us, and he claims to be a divine prophet, but he has created troubles for us. And can you help us with this? And some of the people in the among the Jewish community who had some studies and who had read books, they told the Arab pagans that ask him if you want to confirm or check whether he's a true prophet or not. Ask him these questions, three questions. Ask him about the story of the people of the cave, and ask him about the Dhul-Qarnayn, the person that made trips to different sides of the whole world, and also ask him about the true nature of a spirit. If he answers you in all three questions, he's not a prophet. If he refrains from answering you in all of them, he's not a prophet. But if he answers you in the first two and refrains from answering in the latter one, he is a divine prophet. So the pagans came to the prophet and they asked him these three things. They said, if you have knowledge of the unseen, or if you have access to divine knowledge, then tell us about these stories, the story of the people of the cave, and then the story of Dhul-Qarnayn, and also tell us what is the true nature of the spirit, the ruh. And Quran tells them the story of people of the cave, hence we have the Surah Al-Kahf, the chapter of cave. And also at the end of Surah Al-Kahf, we have the story of Dhul-Qarnayn. وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنْ ذِلْقَرْنَيْنِ قُلْ سَأَتْلُوا عَلَيْكُمْ مِنْهُ ذِكْرًا. Tell them that I tell you the story of Dhul-Qarnayn. And then about ruh, وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنْ الرُّوحِ. They ask you about spirit. Tell them, وَمَا أُتِيتُمْ قُلْ الرُّوحُ مِنْ أَمْرَ رَبِّي. Tell them that ruh is from the command of my Lord. وَمَا أُوتِيتُم مِّنَ الْعِلْمِ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا. Only know this much, that ruh is from the command of my Lord, and you have not given any knowledge but a little one. وَمَا أُوتِيتُم مِّنَ الْعِلْمِ. You have not given knowledge but a little. And this has become a source of different opinions and discussions among mufassirun. What is that beginning part and what is the latter part of the verse? We will have a break and we come back to continue the discussion on this verse.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to your program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. We were talking about the verse referring to Ruh, spirit, in the Holy Quran. We said the occasion of the revelation, as some pagans went to ask the Prophet about three topics. In two topics, they received their answers. In the third topic, the Prophet gave them, or the revelation, actually, Quran, gave them a general answer, which says, قُلِ الرُّوحُ مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّ. According to Mufassirun, this command of my Lord, مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّ, some believe that it refers to the immaterial nature of the ruh, because they say there are two stages, or there are two types of creation that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has. One type of creation is when the thing being created needs to go through a process. If, for example, you want a human being to be created, because it is from it has a natural body, then we need a natural process for the body to take shape and then the spirit being breathed into it, as the Quran says. So this called al-khalq, alamul khalq, ala rahul khalq wal amr. Al-Khalq means the type of creation that needs preparation before the actualization of that thing. In all things that we see in the natural world, that is true. And then we have things that only need the command of God directly and without the mediation of any process, any preparation. Immediately the thing is created, and that is these things are called the beings of the realm of Al-Amr, the command. And the verse says, قُلِ الرُّوحُ مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّي. Tell them that spirit is one of the creation or one of the creatures in the realm of Al-Amr, the command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Things that are created, things that are actualized immediately after the command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it's an immaterial being. And then says, وَمَا أُوتِيتُم مِّنَ الْعِلْمِ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا. You have not been given a knowledge about spirit, but a little amount of it. Because as you know, from previous times and from previous nations, both in pagan ideologies and also in Abrahamic faith ideologies, the discussion about the nature of the spirit are long discussions, and it was a matter of puzzle for them, or the reality of it, the relationship between the soul and the body, the spirit and the body, what happens when we have dreams, when we have experiences that nowadays we call near-death experiences or religious experiences. Or, for example, is it the body that is influenced by the spirit, or the spirit that is influenced by the body? We have like diseases and problems that are the result of psychological effects. Like, for example, a person is stressed out and then body gets influenced by that stress and he develops some illnesses in the body. Or sometimes the illnesses of the body have effects on the soul. So these and other discussions about the relationship between the soul and the spirit and the reality of the spirit had kept people busy before Islam. And Quran says, just know this, that this is an immaterial being, but it belongs to the immaterial realm of the creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and you have not been given knowledge enough of it. And doesn't matter how much you talk about it, you cannot find all of it. You cannot profoundly know it. This would be Quran's main discussion or verse according to, relating to the spirit. We have other verses about the soul for many more than, like, around 200 times the word soul, nafs, has been counted in the Holy Quran. Inshallah, in the next episode, we start our discussion about the concept of soul or nafs in the Holy Quran. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. صلى الله على محمد
صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English